This is the weekly podcast from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Trevor Dan with the latest UK radio news and David Lloyd's radio moments as always. But first this.
Hello and welcome to the DexaU's Midnight Runner edition of Romaniacs, the large Hadron Collider of Brexit podcasts, where we send all the information about Britain's departure from the EU spinning around at fantastic speeds. I'm Dorian Linsky and I'm back from my holiday in France, where I somehow avoided the four-hour border hell that the Daily Mail claims the EU has imposed as an ironic punishment for Brexit. Maybe the passport gendarmes gave me special Romaniacs treatment. And joining me as usual is the editor of politics.co.uk, Ian Dunt, who has also been away. Oh, Ian, where did you go?
I went to Italy. It was absolutely terrible, as you can imagine. There was lots of really lovely wine, very good meat, very lovely cheese, and lots of sunshine, so I had a dreadful time.
Good job we're getting out of that Europe, isn't it?
Yes, it's about time that we did that, really. I'd really prefer some more obstacles between me and that particular location.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
That's how the latest edition of the Romaniacs podcast opens. It's a fascinating example of a new trend in audio journalism. Strong opinions, unmitigated by the requirement to achieve balance or impartiality. One of the producers behind it is an old colleague of mine, Andrew Harrison, whose byline you may remember from Q Magazine, Mix Mag and The Word. Andrew's also written a fascinating piece for The Observer this week about what's happening to trust in mainstream media. Two reasons then to catch up with one of the UK's most astute media commentators.
Broadcast Bionics, solutions for radio, sponsors the Radio Today programme.
Andrew, why did you start making Romaniacs and who did you originally aim it at?
Well, we've been running a podcast called Big Mouth for a year or so, which was essentially pop culture natter with a lot of my sort of colleagues from the Word magazine and Q magazine and so on. Myself and Matt Hall, who used to work at something else, and also Guardian and BBC radio and podcasts. And we've been doing this for a year and it was tremendous fun. But we felt that there was, you know, something a bit harder edged, a bit more serious to be done. But both of us spent a lot of time raging about Brexit. We couldn't believe that this thing was happening. But we also saw that Pod Save America was doing very well in the United States, where they had taken the approach with Trump that you could do a podcast that didn't observe any of the pieties of radio. There would be no false balance. There would be no let's hear what the other side has to say. You could swear. You could be angry and outrageous because, you know, Brexit is a very angering thing. And Matt suggested, why don't we just do that with Brexit? And it just seemed to be a very, very clearly good idea. I think a lot of, you know, people who voted to remain feel completely adrift, completely bereft. And it, you just, as a person who voted to remain in the EU, you feel completely cut off from the debate. So we thought, why don't we do something for Remainers? And we called it Romaniacs because obviously that's the insult that Brexiteers, Brextremists, throw at you. They say that you're a Ramona and a Romaniac and that you are a loser and that you have got, you are the bad loser. And in fact, they are the worst bad winners going. I don't know, the whole shut up, get over it thing really, really annoys people. So we thought we should do something that was out and proud for Remainers that was completely kind of committed to the idea that we should do whatever we can to mitigate this and ideally reverse it. And it came together very quickly in the studio. We spoke to Dorian Linsky, who's an old colleague of ours in the Music Mags, has written a fantastic book about protest songs, a Guardian columnist. He was really into the idea because, I mean, I talk to him on Facebook all the time and we kind of share a similar perspective on this. I got hold of Ian Dunt, who is the editor of politics.co.uk. He's a bit of a rising star columnist and a very sharp chap. And the third member of the team is Peter Collins, who is a former business editor at The Economist and my mum's cousin. And it just, you know, the minute we got them together in the studio, there was fantastic chemistry, I believe, as is known in the radio business. They're all really good talkers. They're all really sharp. They're all really intelligent. The great thing about the podcast format, of course, is you go on as long as you like. There's no sort of, I'm sorry, Minister, that's all we've got time for. Or I'm sorry, we now need to hear the voice of the other side of the argument, which may have nothing going for it apart from, you know, kind of rejectionism or a refusal to engage in the arguments. The false balance thing, which I mentioned earlier, by the way, that the idea that because the BBC is constrained to have impartiality and balance, you often see this scenario, particularly in Brexit, where 95% of economists think this is a suicidal, crazy idea. Well, they have to get Patrick Minford on. We don't have to do that. We can just talk in completely straightforward terms. We don't have to get somebody from Leave EU on. We don't have to get somebody from, you know, the numerous Brexity troll type Facebook groups. We can just tell it like it is, and the listeners have found it quite a boon in their week. We have people saying this is the only thing keeping me sane, and it's the highlight of my Friday, and I can't get intelligent talk about Brexit anywhere else.
Andrew, give us an idea then of the numbers and the response that you've had.
Well, I mean, we're getting sort of between sort of, you know, 14,000 and 17,000 on a regular episode. On our election special, we beat 20,000 quite easily. And for me, you know, launching that off the back of no brand at all, you know, this is not a brand extension for The Guardian or The Times or The Economist. This is going out completely naked into the debating chamber, as it were. You know, we've got no promotional budget. It's entirely done by word of mouth. Facebook, Twitter, and so on. Ian and Dorian have got big Facebook and Twitter followings, so that's good. We bring in special guests who also have big Twitter followings. That helps spread the word. But, I mean, to get to those figures, I mean, that's kind of what a lot of the sort of senior political journals of thought will be doing on the newsstand. And I think it's quite an achievement. I mean, it's obviously we're not doing radio figures. We're not in the hundreds of thousands at all. But what we've got is, and I think this is going to be the future for a lot of radio, an incredibly intense connection with a group of people who are very, very, very interested in this subject. And they're also influential people. You know, niche is the future. I learned this in the world of magazines, which went through this tumult probably faster than or earlier than many other people, that, you know, niche is the future. Better to have 25,000 absolutely committed, super interested people than, you know, 80,000 who don't really care about what you're saying and can leave and be distracted at any time.
I spoke last week on this podcast to Ian McIntosh of The Guardian, who's launching the new James Richardson football podcast, which is called Totally Football. And he was saying that whereas a few years ago it was very hard to get advertisers to buy into the idea, nowadays that whole mantra of niche is king is really working. And I noticed that you do have an advert at the front of Romaniacs. I mean, have you gone out there into the market looking for people to sponsor you?
Actually, not yet. I mean, we get through Audio Boom, because Audio Boom is our platform and they have an automated ad server. What we're not particularly thinking in terms of straight up advertising. We're thinking more in terms of sponsorship and also in terms of a crowdfunding model, because what we wanted to do, because it's very, very cheap to launch podcasts. We found that with Big Mouth and now with Romaniacs, it doesn't cost a lot. What you can do is you can get out there and you can establish your audience and you can find out who they are and you can find out who they'd fit with. You could also develop that intense relationship such that they will probably want to fund you as well. So we're looking at the crowdfunding options. One of the great things with Romaniacs is it's not just a show, it's a cause. And if you're a Remainer who can't stand to see what's happening in politics, there isn't really anywhere for you to go. There isn't a political party advocating for you. The pressure groups are quite kind of fuzzy around the edges. So we think that we've got a cause here that people will be willing to pony up a few quid out of their own pocket. We did a lot of research through Patreon and discovered that they're, you know, in the US market, where it's a lot more developed maybe than it is here, there are podcasts pulling in $70,000 a month on the Patreon alone because they're delivering. And often it's music. It's things like trap, you know, American sort of hip hop style stuff. But the political, the comedy, the drama podcast will haul in quite a lot on Patreon. So going straight to the tip jar model does seem to be quite a good thing for us.
For people who are interested in the Ramones as well as the Remains, tell us about your logo, which always makes me smile.
Oh, it's just a little spoof on the Ramones logo. It says Romaniacs and it says, "Ho, hey, let's stay," rather than "Hey, ho, let's go." And we've sort of, it's got the EU stars on it. It's in the EU colours. And we are looking to merchandise this via the crowdfunding thing. So, you know, if you want a Romaniacs mug or a T-shirt or a tote bag, the tote bags are lovely. They say, "Don't blame me, I voted Remain." So shortly you'll be able to pitch in and support us and get your lovely tote bag and T-shirts and stuff like that.
Good. Well, we wish you well with that. Andrew, while I've got you, I read with great enthusiasm your article in The Guardian this weekend about journalism. And what interested me about it was that I feel I've read too often, possibly, about how there's too much fake news in the Daily Mail and other right-wing organs. And you're talking in this article about how it's not just the right wing of politics that does this, it's everybody. Could you just elaborate about that? Because I'm interested in how we as radio journalists react to the fact that it is now possible for people to just hear the news with the slant that they want, rather as, in fact, you are doing with Romaniacs.
Well, yeah, I mean, the piece is for The Observer, and it was essentially, why is trust in the mainstream media falling? Which obviously leaves the question of, well, is it really? And I found that in some respects it is, in others it isn't. People are consuming far more than they did. Maybe they're being a bit more discerning. Maybe they're looking for something that echoes their views. But there's a skepticism out there that is, in some respects, quite healthy. On that aspect of fake news coming from the left and right, firstly, I think we have to make a distinction. Fake news is not really the same problem in Britain as it is in the United States. You don't have stories made up from whole cloth, entirely fictional propagandist news stories developed in order to kind of make you change your vote, the way we saw in the US presidential election, where there were outright falsehoods peddled by many of the alt-right sites to chisel away at Hillary Clinton's votes. What we have here is we have incredibly partisan coverage. We've been used to that on the right in the Daily Mail and the Telegraph for such a long time that people kind of price it in. You know what you're getting from the Daily Mail. What we've seen lately developing has been alt-left sites like Squawk Box, The Canary, Evolve Politics, which give a massively, massively slanted take on the news. And you could boil it down to the idea that they have concluded that they should fight the right-wing's bullshit with their own bullshit. And I think that's, you know, often what you see. You will see stories built on a tiny fact or a tiny tweet or a tiny quote developed into this enormous edifice of conspiracy, which proves without a doubt that the BBC is in the control of Theresa May, or proves without a doubt that the Conservative Party literally wants to kill disabled people. Now, we all know that what you see in surface politics is not necessarily the entire truth of it. But I think the unhealthy thing with these sites is that they promote a uniform narrative, which is that it's all a conspiracy. Everything is happening for an evil directed reason, and you absolutely can't trust any politicians at all, with the exception of Jeremy Corbyn. And these sites produce a consistent line on that. They're as vitriolic against the Labour, right and the centre as they are against the Conservatives. And the really worrying thing about it is that people like it. They like to have their worldview confirmed, because the complicated, messy truth, where there may be more than one side to the argument, is never as satisfying as a simple one-note, you know, confirmation of your point of view. Now, I realise I'm open to slight charges of hypocrisy here, because I'm running an anti-Brexit podcast, which says that Brexit is a bad thing. We do try within Romaniacs to make sure that within that basic, you know, conviction that the country's doing a bad thing here, that we do have a bit of balance, and we look across we look at it in nuanced terms. I don't think anybody would want to listen to an hour long podcast every week which just said the same thing over and over.
Now, you mentioned earlier the sort of false equivalence that marks out some of what the BBC does in its striving for impartiality. The other way that people look for balance is perhaps the LBC way, where you put James O'Brien on in the morning and you put Nigel Farage on in the evening, and you sort of balance across the whole day. If you were running a radio station and you wanted to serve people with both points of view, how would you do that? How would you achieve that balance?
God, the terrifying thought of me running a radio station.
It nearly happened, I'm sure, at EMAP.
Oh, God, it really didn't. I think the LBC model is quite a good one, except obviously they major so much on sensationalism. You know, the Katie Hopkins and Nigel Farage aspect. I do wonder whether James O'Brien, fantastic though he is, he's absolutely wonderful, and we share a lot of his stuff via the Romaniacs Facebook and social media accounts. But I do wonder whether he is, to an extent, their fig leaf. And that, you know, when you look at the overwhelming slant of the station, it is pretty much to the right. And I'm not sure if they are delivering that balance. You know, voices from the right are terribly exciting. You know, they get angry. They get worked up. They make emotional declarations and appeals. And voices from the far left are also discovering that that is a way to generate audience. The problem is that the sensible centre is kind of boring. It's hard to get that emotional charge out of somebody saying, perhaps we should compromise, perhaps we should listen to all parties and come to a conclusion. So I think that's, radio is a fantastic emotive format. It's the kind of thing that gets you really charged up in your working day. Podcasts are slightly different, because people make a determined decision that they're going to engage with this thing. They're going to make it part of their week. But radio is ambient. Radio is part of your world. Yeah, I think LBC are doing a really good thing. I would like to see someone take that format and maybe take the Sturm and Drang out of it a little bit, so that you can actually have intelligent debate between opposing people, rather than this kind of dialogue of kind of clanging voices that don't really engage with one another.
Andrew Harrison, and apologies for the dodgy Skype line. You'll find Romaniacs in much better quality on Audio Boom or via any of the usual podcast purveyors. Time for Radio Today News now. Here's Stu.
Thank you, Trevor. This week, the latest Ray Jars are out for quarter two 2017. Here are the headlines from them. A record reach for Radio 4, helped by an increase to the Today programme. Capital got its biggest audience in 13 years, as it remains the biggest station in London. LBC hit 2 million weekly listeners for the first time. Grimmie is up. Chris Evans down, though, losing 500,000 listeners. Talk Sport's had its lowest reach in 7 years as digital sister stations Talk Sport 2 and Talk Radio do particularly well. Heart 80s has debuted with 852,000 listeners a week. BBC Radio London's doubled its audience quarter on quarter. Big rise too for Vanessa Feltz on Breakfast, and record reaches for Smooth Northwest, Heart Yorkshire and Smooth East Midlands. Lots more analysis and full station graphs, of course, at radiotoday.co.uk/rajar. Also, Radio 2's announced its programming plans as it prepares to celebrate the 50th birthday at the end of September. There's going to be documentaries about the station's history and a special Friday Night is Music Night presented by Ken Bruce, plus a two-part documentary on the story of the Light programme presented by Paul O'Grady, and programmes featuring listeners sharing their stories of Radio 2. Current presenters will reflect on their relationship with the station as they're photographed by the rock star Brian Adams in another special programme. And next week, Johnny Walker meets the Pirates to mark half a century since the Marine Offences Act took effect. All this, of course, plus a special digital pop-up, Radio 1 Vintage, which is on over the final weekend of September. Lots of things to look forward to. Gary Vincent's leaving Magic after 13 years as part of upcoming schedule changes. Nick Snaith moves from Breakfast to Mid-Mornings to replace Gary from the 4th of September. This is all because Ronan Keating and Harriet Scott are taking over Breakfast. On Harriet's old weekend breakfast slot will be Tom Price, while Matt Brown replaces Tom on weekend afternoons at Magic. An oops moment at BBC Radio London this week after Vanessa Feltz's annual appraisal was accidentally emailed out to all staff at the station. The Sun newspaper this week reported that the memo highlighted doubts about her position and expressed how it was a constant battle for her to keep up with the hectic pace of doing a breakfast show. Stephanie Hurst is back on air in Yorkshire. She's covering weekday mid-mornings for 2.5 weeks on BBC Radio Leeds over the summer. Meanwhile, original Pop Idol contestant and local lad Gareth Gates has signed up for a bank holiday show on BBC Leeds. Trending on Radio Today this week, the revelation that Ed Miliband was paid £500 a show to cover for Jeremy Vine on Radio 2 recently. The figures were published in the Register of Members' Interests at Westminster because Ed is an MP. Celador is facing competition for the Torbay licence from Radio X. It's proposed a new station called Devon Sound to challenge the existing licensee, which broadcasts as The Breeze. And 36 groups from around the country have put in applications for community radio licences. You can see the full list just published at radiotoday.co.uk.
Thank you, Stuart Clarkson. David Lloyd in a tick.
Your best content, shareable and discoverable on any platform. Oasis from Broadcast Bionics helps you build a closer relationship with your listeners. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
Radio has had its fair share of industrial action over the years, but perhaps none quite so widespread as this.
It's 8 o'clock on Wednesday, the 7th of August, 1985. As I expect you know, we aren't able to bring you a news bulletin at this time. As a result of the day of protest, the BBC governor's decision not to broadcast the Real Lives film. In its place, some piano music.
This is the BBC World Service broadcasting from London. We are sorry that we are not able to bring you our usual programmes. This is because many members of staff in the external services and throughout the BBC are striking for 24 hours. As you may have heard earlier this week, this action is in protest against the decision by the BBC's Board of Governors to withdraw a television documentary about extremism in Northern Ireland, following a request from the British Home Secretary.
This is BBC Radio 2. It's 12 o'clock midnight. Because of the day of protest just coming to an end, we're unable to bring you the news at this time. However, we do hope to restore our news service in an hour's time at 1 o'clock. In a couple of minutes, we return to Round Midnight and Brian Matthews.
It's 12:30. As you're probably aware, because of the day of protest against the banning of the film and extremist views in Northern Ireland, we're unable to bring you our regular newsbeat summary.
The best sound in Britain, Radio 1.
There's never been a strike like it in British broadcasting. 2,000 BBC journalists walked out, forcing the cancellation of news bulletins on television and radio at national and local level. There was no news on the corporation's overseas service for the first time in its history. Journalists at ITN also went on strike. In the end, only a few commercial radio and television stations managed any kind of news service. The Home Secretary said the strike itself amounted to censorship, but the journalists strongly defended their action.
The big broadcasting strike this week, 32 years ago. 1993 now, and this week that year, DLT Dave Lee Travis resigned on air from Radio 1.
Quack, quack, oops.
He'd been a household name, not least for being the third ever presenter of The Breakfast Show.
Changes are being made here that go against my principles, and I just cannot agree with them.
Am I sorry I left? No. Am I sorry I did it on air? No, not at all. I would do exactly the same thing over again.
So I was in Mallorca. I was getting the papers a day late, as you did in those days, and there was a copy of The Sun on a newsstand, and it said, "Why I Resigned on Air by DLT." And I spoke to Johnny Beerling about it, Johnny Beerling, who was my predecessor and was still in post, because I was on holiday.
I think I was at home with a tummy bug or something when Jeff Simpson, who was our press officer, called me and said, "Dave's left." I said, "What do you mean he's left?" "Well, he's announced his resignation on the air." So I called him. I said, "Well, you don't leave me any alternative." We didn't fall out about it. He knew by doing that I had no choice but to get rid of him, because he'd had some sort of sound off on the air a couple of days before, I think, on the Saturday show. And I'd given him a sort of fairly heavy warning then that if he were to do it again, he'd have to go. And he'd given an undertaking not to. And then he went and gave an interview to Piers Morgan.
And a very, very good Christmas Eve morning to you, everybody. Welcome along to the DLT show. We got, as usual, a host of goodies for you. Probably a few more quickies than usual because of the festive season. And, of course, a very, very large selection of beautiful music for you. And the one we've picked to open up today's Christmas Eve programme is this one from Gilbert O'Sullivan. The title of the song, No Matter How I Try. No matter.
It seems quite some time since they were playing Gilbert O'Sullivan, doesn't it? Dave Lee Travis, and before that, the voices of Matthew Bannister and also Johnny Beerling on Dave's resignation. The early commercial radio stations were lively affairs, not least Beacon Radio in Wolverhampton. Its launch MD, Jay Oliver, died this week 9 years ago. He was a colourful character, wrestling with his dreams of a great music radio station like he had back home in California, but in Wolverhampton, complete with the tough UK regulation.
All the areas tend to be different. And so instead of trying to cater for any one area, which is the hardest thing to do, we've put together a type of programming which will cater for the whole area. We've come up with a thing called News As It Happens. We will mix that with a news on the hour, which we will take from independent radio news. That'll be national and international news. And then in the hour, depending on what happens in the hour, we will come into the programming and integrate into the programming news bulletins as there is news that merits being aired. And that's mainly local, but it can be national. If it's a national story of interest to the people in the area, then we will bring the update so that they don't have to wait till on the hour to get it.
The music is the sunshine.
The larger-than-life Jay Oliver, who was to return to the United States after his short spell in Beacon's earliest days. The station's now free radio. This year sees so many 50th anniversaries in the world of radio, and who's this on air on a pirate station this week in 67?
Probably for making me sound too old, actually. I remember Buddy Holly singing that one without actually too much equipment going from on a London Palladium show back in 1958. One of Buddy Holly's greatest hits, perhaps in my opinion even his greatest. Buddy Holly that time and Ray Vaughan. Backtrack time just coming up now to 10 minutes past 5 o'clock on Radio Scotland with me, Richard Park. Thanks so much for joining me. We're sort of all the way in now, playing mainly number one hits, although some other very great hits by some very popular artists. I'd like to make a wee dedication on the show, if I may. Not often I make personal calls to relatives of mine, but my younger brother Christopher, in hospital at the moment, not feeling too good, so I thought we'd play him this one. A big favorite hit from 1964, gigantic number one hit, written by John Lennon and Paul McCartney.
The enthusiasm of Richard Park on board the Pirate Radio Scotland this week in the Summer of Love.
I'm for you, I'm Radio Scotland calling you. Down the ladder, Radio Scotland station, then on 2.2. Who has all the latest records? Radio Scotland leads the way for the best in entertainment. Stay with 2.2 all day. I'm for you.
It's 40 years now since Dale Winton made his commercial radio debut. He'd arrived hotfoot from the biscuit factory station, UBN.
Winter draws on, if you'll pardon the expression, cold, cold mornings. So spare a thought for Gertrude, left outside all night. No wonder she's reluctant to start first time. Maybe a few kind words and a shot of antifreeze in her radiator will do the trick. You know, it really is antifreeze weather now, so have you treated the other woman in your life to a can of antifreeze? Oh, and don't forget, love means warm your hands before lifting her bonnet.
He really was the best in mid-morning commercial radio, wasn't he, in those days? A young Dale Winton. So, with BBC Cleveland having launched as Radio Teesside, rebranded again to BBC Tees 10 years ago.
Radio Cleveland from the BBC.
Mark Page preparing for his Radio 1 debut 34 years ago.
I don't think you'll have heard anything quite like it before.
And Agnew getting his leg over 26 years ago.
He just didn't quite get his leg over.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Agus, do stop it.
Thank you, David. Also, Stuart Clarkson and Andrew Harrison. This has been a TDC production for Radio Today. Thank you for listening. See you next time.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.